It was a Sunday to remember at TPC Sawgrass. The final round of the players saw young studs come undone and wily veterans play their way into the mix. But when the chaos finally cleared, Cameron Young was your champion. His second PGA Tour title and the biggest victory of his career. Let's talk about how the horsemen of Sleepy Hollow kept his head when all around him were losing theirs. This is Golf Today.
Golf Today.
Welcome into Golf Today. Eamon Lynch alongside George Savarikas. We've only ever seen one repeat winner at the TPC Sawgrass venue, George. What we do see every year is guys making their way through that back nine on two wheels every year. It is really tremendous theater. It never fails.
Yeah, it's been an amazing watch. And six of the last seven have been decided by a single shot or have gone to a playoff. So it seems like every year there is meaningful golf played on that finishing stretch of 16, 17, 18. And I think it's important for fans, if you zoom out and say, okay, we have five big championship events starting in the month of March, going through July. Only two of the five are played at the same course every year, with the Masters at Augusta, the Players on the stadium course at TPC Sawgrass. So there is now some familiarity with not just the finishing stretch, but the holes you see year to year that go on to decide the Players.
And here he is, the seventh man to get that first Players win in his fifth start, dating all the way back to Jerry Pate in 1982. Some pretty impressive names he joins on that list. And afterwards, he talked about how he handled the nerves towards the end.
I was really, really good until I had to make the 8-inch putt on the last hole. And I just about fell apart. I couldn't get my line to point anywhere near the hole. And I went and hit it anyway, which maybe I shouldn't have. But, it went in, so all is well.
Cameron, could you describe how stressful it is trying to win on a course with this many, booby traps?
It's absolutely exhausting. You know, this place has had my number the last few years. I've never really had a good finish here. It is incredibly taxing. Every shot all day long, you can get yourself into trouble. There's no easy ones. There's no givens. And you're going to make mistakes. So it's a great test of, it's a test of will, a test of patience, and obviously a test of hitting some good shots. So I feel like I did a lot of those things really well this week.
Where would you put that drive on 18 in your career best of doing anything? And given what happened yesterday, especially, and as kind of a follow to that, your perspective that you kind of showed yesterday after you put the ball in the water really felt was a good drive. How important was that as that move toward today, if that makes any sense?
Honestly, I did not drive it. I drove it so well last week, and I drove it so average this week. I felt like I never quite got in a rhythm. It never was coming out the way that I meant it to. And I finally hit a couple good ones on the back. And then, the one on 18, my thought process over that ball is, one, making sure that I'm committed to my line. And two is the overarching thought is, I'm going to hit the best shot of my life right here. And I don't know if I can think of one that's better. So to do it, like you said, especially given what happened yesterday, I didn't make a bad swing yesterday. Just there's a lot of wind and, I missed by a yard. But, it's a scary tee shot. And to have hit that one in that moment, that's pretty good.
Cam, I wondered how active you are with goal setting and how you balance the temptation of comparing where you are in your achievements versus where you feel like you maybe could have or should have been at any point in your career.
Yeah, I'm kind of trying to give up on that in terms of, looking at where I am versus where I think I should be in my career. My expectations are, wildly unreasonable. So, and I think they're less so now. I think they have been wildly unreasonable. This is a hard game, and there's a lot of people that are really good at it. So, I'm not huge on setting goals. I've done it. I don't have like a list for this year or anything. My mind for the second half of last season was East Lake Ryder Cup. My mind for the first part of this season is preparing for the Masters. So, my goal was to be in contention as much as possible before that. You know, this tournament certainly has a major feel. The Players is an unbelievable event. And I feel like, if anything, I mean, it's the best possible prep you could ask for, you know, our first major of the season.
And you think he's going to carry that momentum to the Masters. I'm guessing you've never had wildly unreasonable expectations for your golf game.
Just day after day after day. I haven't actually reconciled myself to it the way Cameron Young has, though.
The wow factor was the tee shot on 18. And when you hear the longest ever drive in the ShotLink era on 18, especially given the stakes, it catches everyone's attention. But to you, what was the key for Cameron Young to take this next step in his career and win the Players?
It was actually kind of funny there listening to him say how he drove it so average this week, because even leaving aside that drive on the final hole, he was 13th in the field off the tee, which if that's his idea of average, then he's got a really high bar out there. But the putter really made the difference for him, and it has over the last couple of years. In 2025, he ranked 7th on the PGA Tour in putting. The year before that, he was 146th. The year before that, he was 158th. Cameron Young has taken what was a weakness in his game, maybe the only weakness in his game, and now he's actually turned that into a strength. And it's very easy for a guy to get a reputation as the nearly man out there in the PGA Tour when you've 7 second-place finishes before he got that first win. But I don't think there was a lot of scar tissue there. I mean, Cameron Young was beaten by a lot of good golf. You have to kind of work to find occasions where Cameron Young really let something get away from him. Of those 7, you could probably make a case that a couple of them he really ought to have had, but 5 of them he was just simply outplayed. And then when he showed up at the Ryder Cup last year, the vote of confidence he's given by Keegan Bradley to be sent out first against Justin Rose on Sunday when they desperately needed points, stuff like that plays into a guy like Cameron Young, because he's got all the tools. It's just, what's the question from the neck up? And I think he answered a lot of those questions from the neck up.
And the runner-up point that you bring up is great, because I believe 6 of the 7 times he shot a final round in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And the scoring average was 68 and change.
Kind of hard to win out there, right?
Yeah, he had played pretty well. Yeah. It wasn't like he was shooting 73s and 75s. We hadn't quite seen a final round where he shot a 65 or whatever, or just blew the doors off like we did at Wyndham. But for me, when Cameron Young really got on the golf world's radar was 2022. So I think with Cameron Young, he's 28 years old. He's fourth-ranked player in the world. He's won twice in his last 11 starts. It seems like the biggest Achilles heel he had was putting and attitude on the golf course. And he has completely changed putting, to your point, to a strength. And the attitude now, it's just, if to go from wildly unreasonable expectations and a guy who had beat himself up to just more of a stoic guy, if he's able to carry that going forward, then his talent is going to be what wins out instead of beating himself.
Yeah, there's a guy, and we saw it's a perfect golf course for a guy with Cameron Young's attitude, that kind of flat line attitude where he's never getting too high, he's never getting too low. And on a golf course like this, in circumstances like that, that's a big weapon to have. You mentioned he's number 4 in the world. There's nowhere to hide when you're up number 4 in the world. He's no longer going to be on somebody's list of long shots for the biggest tournaments. He's either on your favourites list or not at all, because he's not far enough down the rankings that you're going to sort of pluck him as your second choice. He's not in the B flight anymore of anyone's fantasy pools.
But if you look at what he has done in majors, he shouldn't be. He's had 6 top 10 finishes, 3 top 4s. In 2022 alone, he had the runner-up at the Open, 3rd place finish at the PGA Championship. He has had this track record of performing well on the game's major stages, case in point now with winning the Players, the 5th biggest event. So spinning it ahead to the rest of 2026, he's got to be a top 5, a top 10 guy as far as the favorites major to major, when you rattle off Scotty, Rory, and then the rest of the bunch would be the Colin Morikawas of the world, the Xander Schauffeles, the Cameron Young is going to be part of the bottom tier of that next group.
Yeah, he really is, and it's going to be fun to watch what he does, actually, when we get to Augusta National in a few weeks from now. Well, Matt Fitzpatrick was gracious in his defeat. Here he is congratulating Cameron's wife Kelsey and his parents David and Barbara.
And this was just such a nice move in the moment, because you know how disappointed Matt Fitzpatrick is. Make sure to go over and say hi to the parents. He and Cameron Young, TGL teammates, so they have. And we say TGL, and I know for the hardcore golf fan, they're like, okay, well, what does that mean week to week? It just means they spend a lot of time together.
Yeah.
So they get to know each other's families, and part of that road life that comprises who a PGA Tour is week to week. And Fitzpatrick was trying to break this streak, game, and it best finishes by a player from England. They have had all these close calls and haven't gotten to the finish line. So Fitzpatrick on the week that was, coming up just short.
Yeah. I mean, I think the big thing is, you know, I believe in my own ability. I feel like that, you know, I've been doing a ton of good work with Mark Blackburn and, you know, just really, really seen so many positive signs over the last, 12 months, really. And, I feel like I was saying last night to my psychologist, like, I feel like I'm very good at getting myself into position between 15 and 5. I don't feel like I get enough positions between 5 and first. And I feel like if I can do that, obviously it's easier said than done, then, you know, I believe I will win more. You know, it's obviously easier said than done, but I back myself down the stretch and I feel like if I can do that, then it'll be good things.
And just what was it like playing with Cam all day, just kind of going back and forth?
Yeah, great. I love Cam. He's such a nice guy, and he's so laid back. It's so nice. So always knew we were going to have a good day today. Just obviously both comfortable around each other, and it was.
What were your thoughts on the crowd out here, and did it maybe have an effect on the final few holes?
Listen. The crowd, that was literally child's play compared to Bethpage. So, if they think that was anything, then, you know, they need to reassess, get yourself up to New York. But, that's how it is. You know, that's how it is. I would hope it's the exact same it probably wouldn't be, because we're a little bit more polite in Europe, I would say. But, I would hope it would be a similar intensity in Europe. I think, I knew it was, you know, I knew it was coming. I had it with Jordan Spieth in 2023. It's funny to me. It's absolutely, I find it hilarious. So
I hope it's the same. Actually, I'm going to take a mulligan. Europeans are way more polite. You speak on behalf of all of Europe. You agree with that, Eamon?
Absolutely.
The final leaderboard for the 52nd edition of the Players: Cameron Young, Matt Fitzpatrick, and how about Xander Schauffele, quietly solo 30, has now had two runner-up finishes and a third place at the Players in his career. Bobby Mack in fourth, and then a slew of guys in fifth, including Ludvig Åberg, who had the 36 and 54-hole leads before fading on Sunday with that 76. Our Ryan Lavner just yesterday asked Cameron Young how Bethpage played a role in his Players' victory.
Came the Ryder Cup experience. How do you think that tangibly helped you today?
It definitely helps. It just provides you some kind of context for how you can perform and how you can think when you feel that way. Dealing with nerves is tricky. They make you, your senses are kind of heightened. Typically, I hit the ball a little farther. So it makes you capable of more, but if you kind of let them get in the way, obviously it can kind of be disastrous. So it is a balancing act of, like, knowing that they're there and trying to use them to the best of your ability. And I feel like, you know, I was definitely kind of low-level nervous the whole back nine, and then certainly a bit nervous over, you know, the putts on 18. It's, you know, it's sketchy back there. It's kind of on a crown, and the greens are fast, and there's a lot of wind blowing. So, the Ryder Cup, looking back, I think is a huge, you know, just learning experience on how I personally deal with those nerves and what I can do when I do feel that way.
And time now for Golf Today Roundtable. We got GolfChannel.com senior writers Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Lav, let's tee you up first. What's your headline from the Players?
Cameron Young uses Ryder Cup experience to win the Players' Championship? No. I mean, this is a player who has been a long time coming, right? You've seen sort of the incremental steps that he's taken ever since he got on the PGA Tour, and all of the quote-unquote close calls that he has had over the past couple years really sort of fortified him. This is not a player who I think you could put Xander Schauffele or even now at this point, Ludvig Åberg with the accumulating scar tissue. Cameron Young really didn't have that. You look at the runner-up finishes that he had on the PGA Tour, scoring average in those was about 67 and a half. And so that's essentially telling me he didn't go out and lose those golf tournaments. He was beaten in those golf tournaments. That proved very powerful for him over the past 6 to 9 months. Obviously, we saw at the Wyndham Championship proving that he could handle a big lead. We saw what he did again in the Ryder Cup, being one of the best American players, 3-1 record, leading the Sunday singles for the Americans, winning that match. And now on this sort of cauldron as well, he said it was one of the first times in his career that he has stood in the 72nd hole tied for the lead. All he did was record the best drive in recorded history on the 18th hole at TPC Sawgrass, one of the most difficult tee shots in the world of golf. And so this is a long time coming for Cam Young, but I think this is really stamping him as a player for the ages and a player who's going to be a big factor in the major championships this season.
That is the drive that you just referenced there, 375 yards, right down the middle. Rex, I was watching your reporting yesterday from TPC Sawgrass with Keir K. Dixon. I saw you mentioned this as a major championship. Have you taken a side in this long-running debate now? Is Cam Young a major champion?
I'm not stepping into that one. I'll leave that to Brandel Chamblee. He seems to have that market cornered. I will say, I'll fall back on what I've argued numerous times about this. I don't feel like it's the media or the tour or even the fans that will decide if it's a major. It'll be the players. And I would argue what we saw yesterday coming down the stretch from all of the cast of characters who were involved, from Ludvig, who stumbled, tried to recover, stumbled again, to Matt Fitzpatrick, who emerged as it seemed like the player to beat, and then finally what Cam Young was able to do over those final few holes. It feels like a major championship to me coming down the stretch, and more times than not, it feels like this tournament delivers. I think that's the definition, at least in my mind, of what it would be. But nope, I'm not getting pulled into that, Eamon, not letting you do it.
Rex, got another one for you here if we're going to not have Lab wade into the is it a major or not a major waters. Cam Young now 2 wins his last 11 starts on the PGA Tour. What type of run is he going to go on?
I think we talked about this last year when he won in Greensboro, the idea that he was by far the best player on the PGA Tour without a victory. I don't think there was anybody even in his class until he finally broke through. And then you immediately start making the comparisons to, let's say, David Duval, when he finally won that first PGA Tour event and how he just went on that tear. I know it's probably unrealistic to expect a player like Cam Young, who is special, who can do unbelievable things with the golf ball, just because of the competition that's out there. There are still Scottie Schefflers and Rory McIlroys in the world, but I can anticipate him doing something special, not only over the next few months, but over the next few years of his career, because of the things I think Lav just laid out. The building blocks that were the Wyndham Championship, the building blocks that were the Ryder Cup, you mentioned it, the trust that Keegan Bradley showed sending him out first on Sunday, and then finally delivering on Sunday with that drive on 18. I know we've addressed it, but the idea that he went through the checklist in his mind, commit to my line, and then hit the shot of my life, that's the coolest flex I've ever heard in golf in my life.
Brian, was yesterday just an emphasis of how much the venue actually matters in the biggest tournaments in this game? Because we see tremendous theatre on this golf course year in, year out, and because it's there every year, there's an intimacy between the viewers at home and actually knowing where all of the booby traps lie on this golf course.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing with Augusta National, right? Like, there's such a familiarity with all the holes. We know the history. We know the tradition. We know what has happened on those holes. We know what's possible. We know the sort of disaster that lurks around. And TPC Sawgrass is such a fun venue to watch the top-tier professional golfers play. I think as a recreational player, it's the hardest golf course I've ever played. But for these guys, I mean, you see doubles and triples all over the place because there is such a steep penalty for any sort of misfire. And so Cam Young said it in his post-round press conference. He's emotionally and physically exhausted because each shot requires such an immense amount of concentration and focus that any slip up, you're going to be recording a six on the scorecard and your tournament could potentially be doomed. We saw that with Ludvig Åberg going 6-6 on the back nine to end his chances, but you're also capable of the flourishes. The shot on 17 and 18 for Cam Young won him this golf tournament. It's amazing to see sort of the disparity of a player who can lose it and a player who can win it all within about 18 holes.
Well, Ludvig Åberg had the 36 and 54-hole lead heading into Sunday at Sawgrass. Had a pretty shaky day all around, a 4-over par 76. And afterwards, the young Swede talked about his experience on the day.
Obviously really disappointed. I felt like I was striking it okay early on. Got away with a few things, especially number four, kind of left miss. But overall, pleased with the week. Obviously today, the back nine was not good, but that's the way it goes sometimes.
What did you feel on 11 and then on 12? Did you feel like it spiraled a little bit though?
Yeah, for sure. It got away from me quick there. It was just poor swings. I felt like I've had that sort of 7-wood right miss a few times this week on number 4, especially twice, and it came up on 11 as well. And then tried to press a little bit on 12, hit and driver where, sometimes you can play 3-wood a little short of that bunker, but obviously really disappointed. I would have loved to be standing where Cameron is standing right now, but overall, I still felt like I saw some nice things in my game this week.
You mentioned yesterday you weren't afraid of thinking ahead and thinking about winning and everything. What was your process like overnight? How nervous were you kind of through the front nine into the back?
You're always going to feel nerves. I definitely felt nerves this morning. I felt nerves yesterday. I felt nerves on Thursday, Friday as well. So, I think the main thing for me is I think about winning, but I try not to get ahead of myself when I'm playing golf. I felt like the front nine, we handled it quite well. I felt like we handled it to the point where, it was definitely could have been a few shots better here and there. But it was just a disappointing back nine, and hopefully I'll do a little bit better next time.
I know there's still walk off the green 10 minutes ago. There's still time to process what happened today. But what do you think is the biggest thing that you can take away from today in the future?
Obviously the biggest thing that I take away is that I feel like I'm playing nice golf. I'm playing golf to the point where I feel like I can contend in big tournaments. Obviously a good finish last week and still a top five finish this week. So overall, I feel like, I'm playing good golf, which is really nice. It's nice to see on a hard golf course last week, hard golf course this week. So that makes me excited. Obviously, I would have loved a different back nine outcome today. Looking at the grand scheme of things, I'm pleased with my golf game.
Well, with more on the other storylines from the Players' Championship, we welcome back Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Ryan, he is your neighbour, Ludvig Åberg, is your neighbour in Nocatee, Florida. Do you think there's going to be a little bit of awkwardness when you're sitting next to him in the hair salon here after this one? Is there scar tissue for him?
First of all, he is moving out of Nocatee. He'll be going to Pablo Creek, which is a slightly more exclusive neighborhood than the one that I currently reside in. I do think there's going to be scar tissue, and it was certainly a confounding weekend for a player who hadn't just played well through 36 holes at TPC Sawgrass. He was on his game as well the week prior at Bay Hill. He was first in driving distance, second in driving accuracy at one of the most difficult driving tests on the PGA Tour. And so we've seen Ludvig shine in these spots before. Remember, he shot 61-61 to win the RSM. He won the on the European Tour when he was sort of auditioning for a spot on Luke Donald's Ryder Cup team. We saw what he did in the Ryder Cup without having ever played in a major championship. Really comported himself well in that environment as well. So it's not like the guy cannot close. However, I think this weekend left a lot to be desired. It wasn't just the ball striking that faded as well. Made some costly decisions off the tee. And one of the things that he really struggled with, and he even mentioned it on Saturday night, which was sort of ominous and foreboding, was how quick he gets. And he's always lauded as Ludvig Åberg for his pace of play and how refreshing it is. But even Ludvig admits that he can get a little bit quick. We saw that with the backswing and the transition on 11. We certainly saw that on 12. Was quick to make a decision by taking driver off the tee, even quicker with a swing with a toe hook that ended up in a double bogey and ended his chances.
Rex, you think more physical or mental for Åberg?
I think it was more mental. I think Lab touches on the idea that he was in such cruise control really through three rounds. And sure, the way he finished up on Saturday probably set off some sort of alarm bells, but I think there was still sort of that quiet confidence that we've come to expect from Ludvig that was there. And even when he started slow, he did the same thing on Saturday. He was one over par through eight holes on Saturday, seemed to recover. He extended his lead. I just think he finally got to the turn, started to think about it. He spoke about this on Saturday night, the idea that he doesn't have a problem envisioning himself winning tournaments. It's probably something he's going to wrestle with for the rest of his career. I guess the part that gets me is a player in two consecutive holes, number 11 and 12, put consecutive shots in the water after not hitting in the water on that golf course a time all week long. It has to be mental because his physical game stood up to the test almost all week long.
Who do you put on your kind of worried watch list, Rex, for between now and Augusta? Who leaves the Players' Championship with maybe a little less confidence than they would have hoped on the road to Augusta?
I don't know that Scottie Scheffler has less confidence because of the way he answered some of the questions on Saturday. About someone asked him if he found something on Saturday, his ball striking was slightly better, and his response was something along the lines that would imply that I was lost. And clearly he doesn't feel like he's lost, but if you look at it statistically, the things that we've come to expect from Scottie Scheffler, the ball striking, this is tee to green play, it simply isn't there relative to where he normally is. He's normally dominant in those areas, and we haven't seen it now in back-to-back weeks. I will dismiss what happened on the West Coast. Dominant performance at the American Express. You win by five. He played well in other venues on the West Coast, but what he has done since he's gotten back east is not Scottie Scheffler-like. And you wonder, he was very unclear if he's going to play the Houston Open, if there will be another start before the Masters. If he shows up, he's not 100% Scottie Scheffler. I'm not saying he can't turn it around, but he's not what we've come to expect the last 3 or 4 years.
Lav, did Rory's words after the Players, where he said he's likely not playing again, did that get an eyebrow raise from me?
It got an eyebrow raise for me because on Friday, he said by making the cut at TPC Sawgrass, that was going to keep him, he thought, from adding a start between the Players and the Masters. He certainly changed his tune 48 hours later, saying he's going to see, he wants to sort of assess where his body is after having a full week of practice, seeing where his game is, and seeing if he needs to add Houston, see if he needs to add the Valero Texas Open. It would certainly be a surprise to me, George, if Rory McIlroy did not play another golf tournament. Keep in mind, ever since the Players' Championship moved from May to March, Rory has always played a tournament in that span. Sometimes it was the match play, sometimes it was in San Antonio, other times, like last year, it was Houston. He has searched his entire life for the perfect formula in trying to get his game and his mind in a perfect spot to tackle the Masters in Augusta National. He finally seemingly found that formula last year by playing Houston 2 weeks prior to the Masters. Why he would abandon that at this point, especially coming off a pretty uneven performance at the Players' Championship, where, again, he did not have any practice leading into it, would certainly be a little bit of an eyebrow raiser for me.
Well, Lab, maybe he's going to be in the kitchen for the next 3 weeks for the Champions dinner, so he can't afford to have another event on his schedule prior to that.
Good point. Also, he has a TBL semifinals that he was uncertain for on Tuesday.
Oh, no.
There you go. So we will wait and see when we will see the world number one and world number two, Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy next. You know that you will see Rex and Lav on the podcast each and every week.
Something of a weird week for the defending champion, Rory McIlroy.
Closing things out at the Players with a final round 71. Talked about the state of his game and when we may see him next.
Happy I got through 4 days and my body feels good. I feel like my game sort of progressively got a little bit better as the week went on. Even though the scores probably didn't reflect it over the weekend, I hit the ball well. I didn't make anything on the greens. So happy to come through four rounds and feel like my body held up well. And a couple little things to work on, but overall, not the week that I wanted, but just trying to take the positives.
In the context of the season, Rory, and obviously what's around the corner, did you get enough out of this week to feel right, I'm going to be ready for Augusta, or do you need to do anything else?
I'll see. I haven't really made a decision either way. I'll see how my body feels. You see how I feel in practice and at home. And, if I get itchy feet at home, maybe at an event at some point. But you know, I feel like it was important to make the weekend here and play an extra couple of days. But yeah, really just see how the next week goes, see how, you know, once I get back to actually a full practice schedule and in the gym again and stuff, see how my body reacts to that, and then I'll see.
Well, the only guy ahead of Rory McIlroy in the world ranking, Scotty Scheffler, also had a bit of a scrappy week out there. Here he is, just left of the green of the par 5, 16th. Yesterday, his third shot. Still showing signs of magic, George.
Yeah, it's a scrappy start to the week, I would say, 72, 73. But on the weekend, 6 under for the final 36 holes that he played. And those were in challenging conditions, especially with what we saw out of those final 5-6 groups on Saturday, the 67, one of the best rounds of the day. So Scotty talking more positively about his game than maybe the average fan, just because the expectations are so high, but he keeps that top 25 streak going.
It's now one of the most recognizable venues in the entire game. Star Wars golf is what Ben Crenshaw described it as 40 years ago, designed by Darth Vader, and it's certainly scared a few guys out there over the course of this weekend. It was a tough week at the Players' Championship. The three toughest holes, 18, 14, and the long par 3, number 8. The scoring average, 72.5, which is the highest since 2022. 6 of the last 7 editions of this championship decided by one stroke or in a playoff. We're joined now by Steve Sands and Gary Williams to talk a little more Players' Championship. Steve, I'm curious if you were surprised by what you saw out of Cameron Young yesterday, because he does have second place finishes 7 times, only the one win, but you wouldn't have known that from the way he closed out yesterday.
No, you wouldn't. And those 7 runner-ups, I think, kind of ramped him up to the point where he is now. I mean, you think all the way back to when we were in Toronto at the RBC Canadian Open and he lost in that playoff with Ryan Fox. I remember thinking, man, Cam needs to win something. And then he goes on to win. And then he gets to the Ryder Cup and performs well in his home state. And I think everybody thought, not that I'm comparing him to Scotty Scheffler by any means, but when Scotty was chosen to be on Steve Stricker's team at Whistling Straits, everybody thought that would be the impetus to him having some really good success individually on the PGA Tour. And I think the same thing is in regards to Cameron Young. I think that Ryder Cup experience at Bethpage Black really helped him. He's a much, much better player, much more confident player, and that putting stroke is a lot better than it was in years past. I think Cameron Young, Eamon, is here to stay for a long, long time.
Yeah, the putter has been hot. And Gary, where do we rank that tee shot on 18 among best clutch tee shots that we've seen?
My gosh. I mean, let's all collectively catalog a few. Even though it wasn't at the end, and again, I can see this, just run it on a reel over and over again. The shape, the gravity of the situation. I think certainly Arnold Palmer's kind of opening tee shot at Cherry Hills 1960, that was the great tone setter. But I'll tell you, there's a couple that I love from one particular venue, Oakmont. Angel Cabrera's tee shot on 18 in the U.S. Open. The beauty of that was not only did he rip the tee out of the ground, as that ball was bounding down the fairway, you can see a red blur going in the other direction. That was Tiger teeing off 15. That one, to me, is right up there. How about DJ in 16 back at Oakmont off of hitting one of the great, forgotten great tee shots ever at Chambers Bay the previous year? He three-putted the hole. He misses the playoff. That one's an all-timer. I think Tiger's tee shot in 2019 on 17, that squeeze cut bullet, he said he thought that might have been the most important shot of the day. But that one at that place, that's number one. And I love Tiger's tee shot in 13 when he won again for the second time. I love Rory's tee shot in 19. This one goes to the front of the line.
Steve, when you look at the other storylines that were prominent going into yesterday, they kind of took a bit of a tragic turn. You know, had you two young studs in terms of Michael Thorbjørnsen, Ludvig Åberg. They both had pretty rough days. Are those learning experiences, or is there anything worrisome in that? We've seen Ludvig put himself in position in the Masters the last 2 years and got a little bit wobbly on both of those occasions as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't be worried about either one of them. They're young. I think everything in sports is a learning experience. Everything in life is a learning experience. I think a little bit of adversity kind of tests your mental strength. And I think both of those young men are awfully strong mentally. You don't get lost in the fact that Ludwig walks around with that laissez-faire attitude, smiling, low-fiving fans in between greens and tees. And no matter what he does, bogey, double bogey, or birdie or eagle, it seems like he has the same expression. I think that it'll be a learning experience for Ludwig. First real big spot leading that way and having that happen to him. And I think Michael Thorbjornsson, first time he's ever been in the Players, getting himself into the final group. And I thought he recovered well after that bad start in the middle portion of the round. So I wouldn't be worried about either one of those. I think if they were a little bit later in life and had more scar tissue, I think perhaps I would be more worried about both of them. But we're talking about a very small sample size of that happening to those two young men. I think the future is very bright for both of them.
Gary, you buying what Steve is selling, where it's lessons learned versus scar tissue compounding?
Yeah, no, I do completely. It's his first layer of scar tissue that he's got to now, you know, kind of put up here. And when does it manifest itself? And I know Rory was younger than Ludwig in 2011 at the Masters. He won his next major championship start by 8 shots. I think all of us would agree that Ludwig is a generational talent. And I think that there are examples, countless ones, of guys who may experience darkness, and then the dawn comes. It may take a little bit longer. But I agree with Steve that all of these things are not only learning experiences. I think what is the most important thing is to not look at it as failure. It's the outcome. And the outcome, and that's classic, you know, Dr. Bob talk, that do not be defeated by it, be emboldened by it. And I think to what Steve said about his appearance as being very placid, which he is something that we will only know in time. But this is early, and I also think this was later on with little tread left, and it was last chance saloon kind of thing. Maybe you feel damaged to a degree. This is the beginning of the book for him. So I think that he will be hardened in a modest way. But the more interesting thing is, when does it manifest itself? Because all players live with those moments. And when do they germinate again? And does it happen 3 weeks from now? We will see.
Speaking of guys early in their career, Gary, Brian Rolapp had a lot of attention last week. The PGA Tour CEO outlined the broad strokes of his vision for the tour going forward, which does include a two-tiered system where it's clearly the event for the elite guys and then events for the rest. How do you think that part of the vision is going to play in the locker room?
I think that's the big challenge. You wrote an excellent piece in the aftermath of that. It's discomforting to say that to you outwardly. But I think that, to me, when you look at the 6 objectives that he rolled out, I think for all of us, the great exercise is what's the most achievable and what will be the most arduous and the last task that he's able to get across the line. I think that he has opened up a lot more of pragmatic thinking and agreement and consensus among the membership of the PGA Tour. Because when you look at fields, when you look at cuts, when you get the sense that meritocracy is going to be a word that is not just, you know, just tossed around with their very little weight, that to me is the part of it. The last thing I'll say about Rolapp that I think is really interesting is that he's a great presenter. But here we are, and we don't have anything definitive yet. But he has a way with the way that he shares ideas without ambiguity. He makes ideas feel like results in the moment. There are no results yet. The results to me are when he starts to get agreement and he starts to get sponsorship and he starts to roll out a calendar that looks decidedly different from what we've all grown up with and getting old with.
Steve, do you echo similar sentiments with what we heard from Brian Rolapp, the manner in which he shared the information, but then you look at the landscape and how is this going to be executed?
Yeah, it's how it's going to be executed, George, I think is the biggest thing. You have a lot of different factions here. You've got television, you've got sponsors, you've got the players, you've got the executives at the tour who do this for a living. You have, you know, SSG and the money that's been pumped into the tour in the last few years. There's a lot going on at the PGA Tour. Is it broken enough to be completely fixed? I don't think so. I think it needs to be tweaked along incrementally and then see where we are towards the end of this television deal. And I think that the TV deal being all the way till 2030, it'll be really interesting to see how the tour handles that. I think Rolapp's presentation is great. I've only met him once. Seems like a very nice guy. And I like his confidence and leadership, and I like the fact that he's collaborating with a lot of different factions in the sport as he makes his way into this game for the first time coming from the NFL. I'll tell you a couple things that I loved and I think the players really loved after talking to them the last couple of weeks since those meetings at the Cognizant. I think that the field's meeting 120 instead of 70 to 100. I think cuts on Friday or after 36 holes, whenever that is, depending on weather, obviously, is a huge thing on the PGA Tour. And it separates itself from, let's face it, the reason we're all here right now talking about this is because of what's going on with LIV. So when you see Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler, the two best players on the planet, grinding on Friday at the Players just to get a tee time on the weekend when they're 10, 11 shots back, to me, that's impactful and it's meaningful in this sport because that's the traditional way this game has been played. And I think having field sizes of 120 appeases a lot of players who are thinking, wow, if this is going to be a closed shop like the old WGC events, like some of the signature events outside of Jack, Arnie, and Tigers, I don't think that's a full-fledged PGA Tour model. And I think the players are much happier to hear that than they were previous when they were hearing numbers that were not conducive to having the David versus Goliath, which in sports is just so important. You've got to be able to have the top and the middle and the bottom being able to compete for those titles.
It certainly feels like a storyline we're going to be talking and thrashing out for months to come. Steve, Gary, it's always great to catch up with you. Thanks for the time today.
Thanks, guys.